The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome. And thanks for joining me once again this Saturday, March 30th, 2013. We have more listeners already than I usually do at this point, at the very beginning of the show. So that is a good sign, and I'm not surprised. Let me just mention that tomorrow is Easter Sunday, and I wish Christians out there a beautiful Easter. It seems like it's Christmas in northeastern Europe right now, but it's actually Easter, and so I wanted to make a mention of that. If you don't hear my voice real clearly, it's because we might be having a little jam up in our server right at the moment, which is nothing that can be done about it, but it should clear up. I'm not sure how you're hearing this, but the music was a little distorted when the show first started. My guest today, I'm pleased to say, is the always provocative Alex Linder. He runs the VNN Forum at vnnforum.com, as well as being the founder of Vanguard News Network at vanguardnewsnetwork.com. Many people, even those who don't like Alex, want to know what Alex Linder has to say on issues, and we're going to find out what he will say. For one thing, about the flurry of manifestos that have appeared recently, putting forth a plan, I would describe them as, for white organization, or how to begin pulling white people together for self-defense, self-advancement, and just plain survival as a race. It seems to have taken on a new urgency right now, and I can certainly understand why, because I'm getting fed up with the way things are. And it looks like we have some young people who want to address this, people new, fairly new in the movement. And I don't know, we're going to see if they have any plans that seem possible. So hello, Alex, and thanks for coming on the show again.
Hello, Carolyn, and everybody listening. It's good to be here. Could I mention, I got on Twitter. That's the one thing new since we last talked. Alex Linder 5 on Twitter. I follow a lot of people. It's really very, very interesting thing. Probably the best thing there is for news. And I know other people have been doing it for years, but I try to provide some epigrams and some wit more than articles, and then just a sprinkling of good articles that people might not have come across. But Twitter's quite an incredible thing for those who aren't on it.
Yeah, I don't pay too much attention to it, but Dan put the White Network on Twitter. And so I look at that every once in a while. But we're not following anybody, he says. We have some followers, and we're posting our programs.
I'll tell you, it's excellent for digging up different things you might miss if you follow basically everybody on the right and just anyone in general who's interesting. You pretty much have a very quick, thorough summary of what's going on out there, especially for anybody who's into news, but they probably already know that.
Okay, let me repeat here that your voice is still sounding a little bit garbled. Not garbled, I can understand everything, just a funny kind of bad quality to it. And, you know, when we start, we connected at 15 minutes before, and everything was good and clear, and there was no problem. And then as soon as the show started, I could hear that. Right before it started, I could hear this.
And okay. Well, I'm happy to speak in an accent if need be.
Well, no. If Tan Stoffel is listening, I wish he could send me a message and tell me.
What is the problem with the computers?
If it sounds. And also, listeners, if you're hearing it that way, please send me an email at carolyn@carolynyeager.com. I'll check over there and see if there's... see if I get a message from you, or if you're hearing it just fine, then tell me that. It could be just me, what I'm hearing. So,
well, I'm hearing you perfectly, so that's all I can say about that.
Okay, well, we hear you well enough, and we'll see. This kind of thing usually clears up, so if there is a problem. So let's say that You were trying to say something while I was trying to say that. So what was it that you wanted to say?
I don't think I was saying anything other than I was wanting to speak in an accent, which was an attempt at humor.
Okay. Well, you can, you can do that, or you can do it later.
I'm all about clever and creative solutions to problems that plague the modern world.
Good, good. That's what we need. All right.
We're I'm a helper. I'm a carer. I'm a nurturer. I'm here to make things better. What I'm all about. Just want people to know that about me.
Who did I hear that from recently from someone who has? Oh, it was George Lincoln Rockwell. In that speech that we had running, oh, it's still running, streaming from the White Network during the month of March.
Yeah, that guy was truly excellent. I got to say, he has a book, White Power. Boy, if you want to know anything about, I think I may have even praised him once when I was talking to you about the difference between conservatives and genuine revolutionaries. I mean, he nails exactly the conservative mindset. Go back and reread that stuff. If you think that anything that we're talking about is new or hasn't been experienced by people who are better than we are. And I mean, he did an incredible amount of speaking, touring around the country and in a somewhat freer day and age and talking at all these different colleges. And he, every problem that, you know, in light of you're talking about younger people coming up with manifestos and plans for organization to defend whites, every problem they will encounter along the way was encountered by George Lincoln Rockwell. And many of them were defeated and some were succumbed to. He wasn't able to overcome them. And of course, he was assassinated before he, before his run was over. Right. So,
well, what was so interesting to me in this particular speech that he talk he was giving to these people in Texas in a private home, I believe, was that he started saying what a softy he was and how he didn't want to really hurt anybody and he didn't hate anybody and he loved his white people and he was just a bunny rabbit kind of thing or something. He was saying. But he knew what was needed to be done, and so that's what he was doing. I really like that because, well, you know, it made it so clear that it's not personal.
And also, that's the irony of it. See, they call us haters, but the real hate is in Jews, and I can say that. But if anyone out there has actually met Jews, and especially left-wing Jews, if you don't think that they are the genuine haters, in fact, that's largely why they're on top, because people like us, at most, we are simply sticking to the facts and not budging from them when we're tried to be shamed by the left. But the genuine, thoroughgoing, deep felt hatred is in the Jews and in the leftist in general. And that's unfortunately true. We actually have to synthesize a lot of the hatred and anger because we might not even feel it as strongly as we should feel it. I mean, we should be absolutely outraged by what they've done to the country and what they've allowed to be. Look at that story in Georgia. You must be familiar with this, Karen. What happened? Oh, a white woman is out with her child in a stroller, and a couple of punk little nigger teenagers come up, and they end up shooting the baby in the face because they're thinking the white woman has
Yeah, that's been paper. Passed around a bit. Mm-hmm.
The Jews created the culture and the society in which this kind of thing takes place. And then, you know, it gets covered only locally in the news and the race part is hushed up. But, you know, we shouldn't be outraged about that. Of course we should. And we should be looking into what is it in our nature and makeup in society that allowed this group to come in and take control in the first place. We need to do some serious soul searching and self-criticism and a racial analysis to say, how is this people beating us and why are we allowing it to happen?
Yeah,
We don't have to get into Christianity because, you know, it's a day before Easter, but that is a large part of the problem, I believe.
Okay. Well, you know, back to this sound thing, you suddenly just came on clear as a bell to me, and I did get a message from Stuart in Florida. Stuart's an interesting guy. He's very helpful. And he told me that it sounded fine. You just sounded a little bit muffled. But anyway, I hear you now. Fine.
All right. Well, I'll try to speak directly into the mic. Maybe that.
I'm sure it's all right. I'm sure it's fine now.
Good.
All right. So I'm glad you got to say that, and that's so true. Now, I thought that before we got into these, there's a few other items I'd like to look at before we get into these manifestos and stuff. And one, and you may be familiar, you may have heard this, or you may just know all about it. Anyway. And that is that I'm usually in my car on Fridays, and last Friday I heard, not yesterday, Friday before, I heard on NPR that they were saying that they were doing this series all the next week about disability, and they gave some information. I just found it shocking and disgusting, naturally. And then yesterday, again, I heard the last of their reports, and it was kind of a summing up. And anyway, I took some notes. And, you know, this, and now I've got notes here on all of the welfare programs, or what you call entitlement programs that we have here in this country. And this, there's now 14 million Americans on disability. And it started out kind of slow, but it started growing, and now it doubles. They say it doubles every 15 years. So, sure, you know, that means if it's already passed 15 years ago, it would, you know, whenever the next time comes up, it'll be 28 million or so. Anyway, then these people are not counted as unemployed, though they really cannot work. If they make too much money, then they get kicked off the program. And if they get kicked off the program, it takes a long time to get back on again. Or it's a lot of paperwork and effort and so on. So once they get on, they pretty much stay on for life, even though a lot of them can work. You know, they're not unable to work. But it's this thing that encourages these people not to work. And, of course, they were talking about how the disability system plays a big role in government, naturally, in the entitlement program. So I looked up entitlement programs, and here's a list of all of them. I'm going to go through this fast. But Social Security insurance, we all know that. Social Security disability, that's what I'm just talking about, 14 million people on that extra. Supplemental security income, also a part of Social Security, which gives money to people who are, you know, 65 or older, blind or disabled. You can be younger, you know, if you're blind or disabled. Now, here there again, more disabled stuff. Then unemployment insurance, we know about that. Temporary assistance for needy families or it's known by TANF, which is cash assistance to indigent American families with dependent children. That's poor American families. And, of course, all these people are considered American families, I guess. Then we have Medicaid, and Medicare, which we know about. Then we have Medicaid, and the people served on Medicaid are low-income adults, their children, and, again, people with certain disabilities. And this is the largest source of health funding in the United States, Medicaid. Then there's TRICARE, which provides civilian health benefits for military personnel, military retirees, and their dependents. Then there's Children's Health Insurance Program, you know, CHIP, another thing to cover uninsured children in families that have higher incomes than the other ones for if you can't qualify for Medicaid, you're not poor enough, you can qualify for CHIP. And then there's Veterans Health Administration, we know about that, and Alcohol, Drug Abuse, and Mental Health Services. So, you know, the whole thing comes down to, if you don't want to do, if you can, you know, don't care about being kind of poor, you don't have to do anything. You're just going to be taken care of by the government.
Yeah, I mean, they're growing classes of dependents who require their services, and they have a whole parasitical economy set up alongside the productive one, and at some point they even out, and that's about where we are, and that's why we're going bankrupt, because the Democrats just keep buying more voters among the incompetent and the inferior, and that's another reason they want the border opened. I mean, the Jews want the border opened because they want to destroy whites through forced mongrelization, which is made easier by importing tens of millions of Mexicans. The Democrats, as a political party, have an interest in less competent people, you know, flooding out the more competent ones, which are basically on the right, the productive private sector people. And that's where we are. There really is about a 50-50 split right now, but all the demographic trends are in favor of the parasites. And, of course, the media are 100% on the side of the parasites. Now, in relation to what you're saying, you can watch TV any day of the week and you'll find lawyers out there trolling for people with disabilities to contact them so they can argue their claims before the Social Security courts and try to get more people on disability. A lot of those people, what the government is doing is paying people who used to be junkies or alcoholics basically to stay clean. And I suppose it doesn't even really have a way of tracking that. But a lot of these people do nothing. And, yeah, like you're saying, if you're willing to live at a low level, just collect your, you know, $600-$800 a month or whatever, you can, there's plenty of places in America where you can live on that amount of money, do nothing, sit around, listen to music all day. And I used to be hooked on heroin, therefore the government now sends me a check. There's all kinds of people like that. And, you know, the conservative principle, which you may have heard or listeners may have heard, is that what you tax, what you subsidize, you get more of, and what you tax, you get less of. You want to subsidize welfare niggers and you subsidize heroin junkies, you're going to get more of them. Just the way if you're sitting on a park bench and you start throwing out popcorn, you're going to get more pigeons. And what you tax, you get less of. So when you tax productive labor, you take away a portion of what they earn and you turn it over to bums and welfare people. Well, you're going to get more of them. You're going to get less productive people. The productive people are going to get angrier and angrier, and eventually they're not going to work as hard. And look at how many taps are set upon the people who are productive. Everyone's drawing out of the public school system. And there's a lot of ways to look at welfare. I wouldn't limit it just to this typical nigger that we think of. I'd include the military. Most of what they do is a waste. It's actively making our country poorer and hate more hated around the world. You could argue defense, there really is a genuine purpose in defense for the federal government, but if there was, it would certainly be stopping the invasion from Mexico and the third world, and yet our government does nothing about that. It actually encourages it. So that's one form of welfare, all these giant defense contractors. I'll go that far with the left. That, along with the blacks, along with the NEA, which is where basically all the hostile anti-white attitudes are spread through Columbia Teachers College to the various schools that train teachers around the country, what used to be called normal schools. Normal means teacher training. And all the little idiot education majors become part of that and have their status built up as change agents is the term they use. And then they're indoctrinating kids and, you know, being pro-homosexual and the rest of the set of attitudes they want every white child to have. All of this works against us, and all of it is funded out of our pockets.
Well, so, yeah, and then look at how much families pay to have health coverage and health insurance. And then for these people who don't work or have poor, you know, have very little money,
I know,
their jobs, whatever, they have these health care programs for the children.
Well,
and there's
I know.
No child just doing without, as they try to tell you that all the time.
The basic thing is, you know, one guy divided, and Eric Thompson always used this, into problem makers or problem solvers. And the problem is the ratio is getting pretty close to 1-to-1. Now, if somebody is not fundamentally capable of feeding himself and his kids and taking care of his life in the most basic way and has to be treated like a pet or a hamster or a gerbil, I mean...
Yeah, right. They shouldn't be allowed to have children. That's why we need programs.
Why do they exist? We didn't have a central government for the first 150 years this country was around, and people were perfectly capable of taking care of themselves. So, but now this monstrosity exists that basically takes half your money in taxes and on the other end is counterfeiting the money, inflating and stealing your purchasing power. So it's got you between both of those grindstones, as Lenin famously said, and they're trying to destroy the productive white middle classes in order to feed the super elite bankers, mostly Jews on the one hand, and the useless, violent nigger criminals on the other hand.
You know, a lot of these people who are disabled are overweight people, and their problems, they have health problems from their overweight, plus some of them can't even walk. They're so fat, and they have to roll around in wheelchair thing.
Yeah.
And I see some of those people on a fairly regular basis. I just get so disgusted. Anyway, so this kind of, you know, here we have this going on in this country. This will fill in, this will lead into these manifestos. But, you know, there's some stories about Israel in the news lately, as there always are. But one I thought was the most outrageous was, did you see it, that Israel is now going to define itself as a national state of Jewish people. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that.
Okay, well, it says that they've made this decision in there. The current government has decided it's rather that the state of Israel is going to be known as the national state of Jewish people. And now, all the all the anti-Israeli people, all the anti-Israel people are going to jump up and down. Oh, that's racist. That's racist. You can't do that. See, and I don't think that that's the approach we should take. I've been saying this for a long time. Let them call themselves the national state of Jewish people. And we can be the national state of white people. How about that? Or whatever kind of people we want to call ourselves. Because
yeah,
they call themselves whatever they want. So,
well, so you know, are they giving up the pretense that they're democratic in light of the...
Well, no, they're not saying that, but their critics are saying it. They say, this is not democratic. You know, and they think that this is great. They're going to attack Israel on this basis. But I think it's the wrong basis because all these people want to be anti-racist, you know. And if they want to hurt Israel by calling it racist, well, they're hurting all of us, you know, and saying nobody can be racist. And I don't go along with that. And I don't think you do.
Well, sure. Well, a lot of those critics of Israel are coming at it from the left, which is kind of some irony or blowback since it was mainly Jews who fostered that wacky way of anti-racist thinking in the first place. Indeed, even came up with the term, as you know, and we all know. It was Trotsky, apparently, who coined that. But in any case, some Jewish communist coined it, and all the Jewish communist media popularized the term.
What, anti-racist?
Well, the term racist in general.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
And we know that by anti-racist, they used racist specifically as a code word for whites. We know that. And it's used to demonize anyone who observes that racial differences exist and matter, and we best take care of our own race because these other races are not equal. And, boy, the left has done a good job of instilling blacks and others with absolutely immovable views that are 100% false. They really believe that blacks were living like kings and queens in Africa before whites showed up and destroyed all the good things.
Why don't they go back then? They'll say, oh, well, we can't get it back now. They've taken over there, too.
You know, they just say Europeans destroyed it; it no longer exists. So now we're going to take it out of your hide, and they're utterly delusional. But it doesn't change the danger they present. The fact that they're wrong doesn't make them any less dangerous.
This is why racism is the only answer that there is. So that you must be able to live among your own people and deal with your history and the truths that you believe in and your culture and so on. You can't, because you cannot change the mind of these other people. Who are going to think what they want to think no matter what. Just like now in Germany, but the Poles are complaining and crying and making all kinds of threats because this television station in Germany made this television program, which is not German friendly, but it also includes what they say is documented evidence of anti-Semitism in Poland and the attitudes of the Poles. Towards the Jews and so on, which were worse than the attitudes of the Germans, who had to protect the Poles in Poland. I mean, the Jews in Poland from the Poles when they were there. And they're screaming and yelling because they refuse to accept anything, even if it's documented or whatever, you know, they don't care. And it's all publicity, and with the media being in control of that, you can't win. And so that's why the only solution is a racial state. And that's why I think this idea that what Israel is trying to do now, call itself, I think it's great. I'm applauding it. I'm happy that they're doing this. Not that I want them to go, you know, not that I have any desire for them to continue, but that they call it, that they come right out and call themselves a state of Jewish people. That's good for us, I think.
It's good that they do it openly. It makes it harder for them to argue that we shouldn't be allowed to do the same thing, although they certainly will argue that.
But there's no argument. That's exactly.
There's no good argument, but they don't need a good argument because they control the media. They'll just say, no, America's a nation of immigrants. Ask anybody. It was immigrants from the start, and they'll deny that it was founded on a racial basis, even though it overtly stated that in the Constitution, you know, with the language about free white persons.
Well, yeah, because at the same time that this story came out, there's another one. Right at the same time here that. A wide range of Jewish groups are urging the faster path to citizenship in the United States. That is, you know, to make this amnesty, allow all these immigrants who are illegal immigrants and so on to become citizens. At the same time, that they've got calling Israel a state of Jewish people. They're doing that in order to keep immigrants out, see, non-Jewish immigrants out.
And what did they do earlier in the year, or was it last year? They booted out, they rounded up and booted out thousands and thousands of black African Jews.
Yeah, so right. So they don't even want Jews. Race. Yeah, so it's not even Jews. I thought that as I was saying it, because if you're these Jews from Morocco and so on,
some of them are cephalosha or whatever they're called, but a lot of them are just, you know, illegals looking for work, and they got other Asians too. So yeah, they have it's a total double standard, complete hypocrisy, and what else would you expect from Jews? That's how they operate.
Well, right, and this is
shameless brazen lying and double standards. But then again, why shouldn't there be double standard? The belief there should be only one standard is a classic white failure pattern that I think comes from Christianity, where you treat all men as if they're brothers. And that's why I say, you know, the religion versus the Enlightenment is a false division. They're two sides of the same coin. They're both universal, and universalism is what nationalism is against. We're not communist internationalists, but we shouldn't be Christian internationalists either. I mean, the Christians are in the middle of Greece helping out the illegal aliens who are coming over from Afghanistan and such, because they don't care. One man's as good as another. That's what nationalism ought to be against. People don't get along, even within whites. You're talking about Poles and Germans not getting along. I mean, people who don't get along shouldn't be forced together. And the best you can do, there's always going to be violence and hatred. The best you can do is let them segregate into their different places, and that will make for the least friction. That's what someone sane, that would be the starting point from which they would look at politics. But the Jewish idea, let's have a uniquely Jewish state that's totally racist and national socialist, but let's force everybody else to mix together, because that's good for our race of people. We can eat them more, we can suck their blood and treasure more easily if they're racially incoherent while we remain racially stable and cohesive.
Well, I think argument should be made really strongly now. I mean, even though it's been made so much, you might feel like you've already made it. But I think many, many of us should be talking about this, because, you know, it's just pointing out how hypocritical they are, which is nothing new. But you know, it's just, you can't have it both ways. You can't say we're going to be a state for Jewish people, but nobody else can be a state for their people. You just can't do it. Even the most dense person gets that, you know.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. No matter what way you try to pretty it up. But so that's good. Then, you know, I sent you this story about just before the show about how they have this art exhibit at the Jewish Museum in Berlin.
Yeah.
Jew in a box. I read that. It made me sick. Because these Jews are so, you know, they're always pushing whatever they're doing, and they have to have their own museums and everything, and then have these exhibits all about Jews. And this one, they're putting a different Jew who lives in Germany or maybe anywhere inside this plexiglass box, and he's sitting there, and people can, that's an exhibit, and people come by, and I guess there's a microphone or something, and you can ask him questions about Jews in Germany or whatever, and he'll talk to you. And they're doing this for the whole month, like, and then they're going to I think this was a news story, and I just saw it, unless it's somebody.
Yeah, I mean, typical
friendly. Yeah, typical trick. Of course, a lot of Jews don't like it, but it's going to go on for like a month, and they've got all these volunteers who are willing to sit in that box for 2 hours at a time and be on display. And the whole thing is to point out that there's so few Jews in Germany now. I think they said
It says fewer than 200,000 Jews among Germany's 82 million people. I'd heard there was more than that. But
well, that's what
the
they
number
say.
They well, Associated you know, Press is using.
Jews, I mean, Germans say that you cannot identify a Jew in Germany. If you try to ask if somebody's a Jew or ask, you know, that's like a criminal act, or it's just so
string for boating.
So you can't do that. I mean, it's not, it's probably not criminal, but it's a very frowned on. So you don't know, and they don't say, and so on. But they want to point out that there's not enough Jews in Germany. That's what they want to do. And that therefore we're like we're like oddballs, you know, people don't know enough about it. And you're so important, especially in Germany, for the Germans to know.
Yeah, the Jews always have to be front and center. That's, you know, even if they're being persecuted, even if the persecution's in their imagination, they always have to be the main show. They're the main deal. No one else really figures. And it's right. Just a typical combination of crappy modern art type styling and Jewish effrontery and chutzpah. No one cares about Jews. Go away. You know, if they weren't plaguing the rest of the world, no one would give a damn about them. Just as no one really cares about Amish. Because they're not interfering. They're running their own lives and minding their own business. But
most of these stories that come out, they're in Jewish newspaper and Jewish press. And then people pass them around to us, you know, but really they're not in the mainstream press other than Jewish all that often. It's only the Jews that care about it.
Well, I mean, like, what is this? The Associated Press makes a big article about it. This is basically just promotion for whatever this museum is and for Jews in general, circulated by the AP. The AP is the main content provider for the 1,000 or so remaining in newspapers in the U.S. So it's just Jews talking about Jews relative to Jewish things, pushing the Jewish agenda, and it's front and center for everybody else, everybody who else wants any part of the media. That's why you need something like a white network.
Exactly.
We are mentioning this Jewish stuff, but in order to give a white perspective on it, Germany has done just fine without any Jews in it. And the fact is, those Jews weren't tortured. Most of those Jews emigrated of their own free will. And that's all.
There's a lot of them want to come, and I just am kind of horrified that now they're making Germany a place for Jews to come. They want it. That's what they're doing. This art exhibit, Jew in a Box, to try to, you know, get more Jews to come and emigrate to Germany.
Yeah,
and
well, plenty of Jews have come back into it. Germany is a very, it has the kind of culture that a lot of Jews like, because Jews have always been focused, we're people of the book, you know, paying attention to detail, being serious, reading a lot. These are not things you find in Scots-Irish culture that defines the South and most of the resistance to what America's become in the U.S. So Jews naturally do like more of the German type culture. Mm-hmm. It's a different type of a culture. And that's why I think a lot of people think after America, the Jews will move on to China, but it's likely they would move back into Germany and try to dominate the world from there, as well as Tel Aviv and New York.
Okay. Then, you know, the Golden Dawn Party, the only latest thing about him, and I brought this up a while back, not the Greek response, but what Lauder was saying, Ronald Lauder, the heir to the Estee Lauder, he runs the Estee Lauder cosmetic firm now. He's always been a very active big Jew. And, of course, he was, you know, they were saying that the Golden Dawn Party should be outlawed by the Greek government and so on. And so the Greeks have answered. I'm sure you're familiar with this.
Yes.
What they said. And I think they answered just perfectly. So they really know how to put it the way it should be. And they never back down at all.
That's right. And what did they say?
Well, they said that, okay, first they say we have to boycott Estee Lauder. They say, due to the hostile attack on Greek sovereignty, freedom, and interests, Lauder's cosmetics monopoly, Estee Lauder, must be boycotted. And then they said, I love this part, an institution that is not Greek and does nothing to contribute to Greek well-being. And this is the some Jewish, what was it called? I might have got rid of that. The World Jewish Congress. Yeah, because Lauder's the head of the World Jewish Congress. And that's the institution they mean, is not Greek and does nothing to contribute to Greek well-being, is demanding Samaras, the Greek prime minister, to put a ban on this third largest party, which is the Golden Dawn, which enjoys up to 18% of the electorate support, all in the name of liberal democracy, nonetheless. And then they end up, my favorite part, the World Jewish Congress claims to speak on behalf of Greece's 5,000 Jews. Why does Samaras care more about the opinions of 5,000 over 1 million Greeks? And again, if Greek is truly a democracy.
Why does Samaras care more about the opinion of 5,000 Jews versus 1 million Greeks if Greece is truly a democracy? And this is reported in the Jerusalem Post. And I don't know how you pronounce the Greek leader's name. I don't know where the emphasis goes.
Just, well, I don't either.
I think stuff like that matters a little. But anyway, Samaras, Samaras, whatever it is. Here's the point. You know, these Jews are very international in character, and they're trying to dominate every little state. You know, we've talked earlier about Soros going in there and funding housing for the illegal aliens that are, you know, 2 million out of the 11 million people in Greece. And how arrogant are these Jews? They just assume the right to dictate all the internal policies of every country out there, not just Israel, but your country as well. And what they do is hostile to you if you're a normal white person. And that's what white nationalism is, or Greek nationalism in the case of Golden Dawn. It's standing up for the Greeks. Is standing up for the real Americans.
And, well, that's right.
In America, it's racial nationalism because we come from different ethnic backgrounds, although most of us, almost all of us, are British German in background, if not both. And the rest, you know, the smaller countries as well are pretty much the same thing. Dutch, Swedish, etc., French.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? In America, racial nationalism makes more sense than ethnic nationalism. In Europe, ethnic nationalism makes more sense, but it's still racially based. So don't be overly confused or think there's a big contradiction there. There's not. It's just historical reasons and particular circumstances that determine the form that this takes. And racial nationalism, we want racial nationalism or ethnic nationalism is the response to Jewish international communism or multiculturalism. That means to end all white countries, even as Carolyn is saying, as it seeks to protect an all Jewish Israel.
Yeah.
So the Jews you're in, just know that. Understand that. They are the ones who are the driving power behind communism, as Winston Churchill, great hero of the conservatives, said. Well, communism yesterday, multiculturalism or neoconservatism today, same thing. Jews want to destroy the racial basis of your country. And a solid racial basis is the only basis on which a successful society can be built. Right?
Well, that's right. And that brings us right to the first of these three manifestos that came out, which is called National Protectionism. I don't know if you have that there to look at or refer to.
Yeah,
but I've got some notes here. It was the people at Renegade Broadcasting, Mike Sledge and Kyle Hunt, who wrote this and have it posted. And I've got a few of the parts of it that I think were pretty good. One thing that has been mentioned before that people noticed right away is that they're kind of focusing on dual citizenship and removing dual citizens from any governmental office in the country, they say, in federal, state, and local. And no citizen shall be permitted to hold office whose loyalty is not totally committed to the betterment and ideals of the nation. You know, of course, this nation, the nation they're serving. And I didn't know what to think about it at first. I wasn't paying too much attention. But reading this over yesterday and the day before, I think this is a good idea. Because some people said, well, they're not mentioning the Jew, really. Are they avoiding talking about the Jew? Well, I think this is actually smart to start out with dual citizens. Who cannot agree, you know, that it's questionable whether people should be dual citizens. And who are most of these dual citizens? Jews. And if we actually being a dual citizen was, you know, outlawed, and these people, or people who had already decided to be dual citizens, were just no longer able to hold any kind of office or important position, that would make a huge difference right there already.
Sure. Way I look at it is, yeah. I mean, no one listening is surely going to disagree with that. I think that the question is, what are you going to do about it? Political power. How are you going to stop it? There's no Republican who's going to take that up. They're fine with, you know, what's his name? Dove. I forget his last name, but Dove.
Zakim.
Yeah, exactly. One of the chief insiders on the 911 stuff. These are the guys. These are like a bunch of tent caterpillars is a figure I like to use, you know, at the kind of at the heart of the tree of our government. You know, they've got just a swarm of them inside the defense and the foreign relations bureaucracies. How are you going to do something about that?
Well, you know, that's the question. And of course, I'm sure these people
Carolyn, can I say one thing? You know, yeah. People want to treat Jews. Oh no, there's no one Jewish force. They're divided up. They're warring among themselves. Who provided the deepest cover for the Bush administration's lies that got us into the war over there? Why, bless my soul, it was a liberal New York Times. So you want to say that Jews are divided and they're not on the same page? That's absolute garbage. What they do is they put up 1,000 different storm fronts, including white nationalist ones, pretending that they're divided and they don't have a one agenda. But in fact, they basically must be treated as a monolith. So even the New York Times is out there providing cover to get these wars started that are good for Israel. So don't kid yourself. I can't stand people who undersimplify. It's a great problem, undersimplification. And it's a problem that most intelligent people are particularly susceptible to.
Undersimplification.
You always hear oversimplification lamented, but undersimplification is more.
They don't simplify it enough.
New York Times and the neocons are on the same page on every deep position that matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the New York Times has been a part of this all the way back. I mean, it was the New York Times. I don't want to get off the topic, but it was the New York Times that first published the idea, the story that Elie Wiesel was in this picture of this famous Buchenwald picture with the tall, skinny man in it, who wasn't actually in the picture after all. There's that picture, that photograph has ended up being so full of fraudulence that's being uncovered now. But you know, they were the first to put that out.
But the paper of record circulates it uncritically, right? And I'm guessing they don't respond to any criticism.
Well, not only that, they ran that picture without that tall, skinny man who's, you know, naked except for holding that shirt in front of his genitals or something. And then they ran it with, you know, they ran both. So they knew that there was two versions of that picture. So they're just so deep into all of this. And you can you can make a list of all the things they've done and stories they've run and so on. But this is like a non-story because nobody will talk about it. Well, back to the manifestos. Now I think that all these people who have started these, have written these, they know that they don't have any way of doing anything, but they feel, I think, that they need to start. They need to make a start. They need to get these issues out and they kind of organize them into how a white organization should present itself or could present itself, and what would be the main need. Well, then again, you know, they just like writing this stuff. People like to say, well, this is what we'll do. if we can do it, this is what we'll do. That's kind of what it is. If we could make changes, we'd make them this way. And other people would say we'd make them that way. But,
There's a lot of agreement among us on what we would do, and there's a fair amount of disagreement as well. But either way, we don't have the power to do it right now.
Well, we could talk about the agreement and disagreement. We don't get into the religious issue, which none of these do. Maybe a little bit. So that would be one. But if we just get into what, you know, political and governmental, these people are saying, you know, that we should go after dual citizens. And then they'd go after dual citizens in media, too, and say that nobody, you know, if they could do it, no dual citizen could own or television, radio, or other media. That would be great, right? And then they're going to clean out the educational system and of dual citizens also, and foreign lobbying and special interest groups. And then they say they want to legalize the legalization of industrial hemp manufacturing immediately. And the hemp policy would be in conjunction with our new manufacturing, textile, and automobile industry. I don't know what that, if they talked about that earlier or what that refers to. But they say there would be a nationalist infrastructure renewal agenda. They do give a little more details, but I just copied down the main things. But legalization of industrial hemp, they seem to think that that would be a very big industry that would be good for us. Not just, you know, that hemp is a good product, but that it could be very, very, big money-making, big deal.
Maybe. I mean, the main thing is get rid of the drug laws and disempower the cops to abuse ordinary people.
So there is a big disagreement between whether there should be drug laws or among these three manifestos, whether marijuana should be legalized or not, or medical marijuana even. Some people.
I didn't notice if they took a position on that stuff or not, but.
Well, the second one, which is called American Nationalist Association by Worldview Foundations and John Friend, they take a position on that.
Is Friend his real name, or is that a dreamed up name?
No, that's supposedly his real name. He says it is. John Robert Friend.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I found out that there's half the people with that name are Jews. But that's, you know, the other half are not. So I know the Jews take all kinds of names. That doesn't mean they're
anything.
No. But I wouldn't have thought that until I read about it.
I haven't seen too many people now. I've seen a lot of people named Fund. There's a big conservative writer, John Fund, Wall Street Journal. Fund, Friend, Self, people with that type of name. I'm not sure I've seen people named Friend.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen much of it.
I wonder if it's a variant of like Freud or gets into that whole area.
Well, it's Freund, which is friend in German.
Yeah.
But I read that Germans don't much take that name. They don't take that name. But the Jews take it. But I saw a long list of Freunds.
There's a lot of words that are very similar, and I don't know if they're all cognates or they're all related or not, so I would hesitate to speculate on any of that. But whatever, I'll take them at face value for the moment.
Yeah, so this thing about the hemp, I think hemp is good, and the only reason that they don't allow hemp, maybe it's not the only reason, they say the reason is because it's a marijuana-related product. And, you know, it's been outlawed all these years, and
usually the drug legalization people will give you a history in which it was manufacturer of some other thing that wanted it outlawed for that reason. So they stirred up a campaign against the use of marijuana as a drug in order to get at the greater corporate interest in shutting down a competitor. I don't know what the truth is. I haven't researched it. To me, I look at the drug war as I don't care if people use really any drug. Even though most,
well, see, I do. I'm on the other side that I think we should if we had our own nation, I think we should outlaw drugs. And we should highly regulate alcohol. We should regulate all that stuff.
No, I don't agree with that, because the cop phalanxes you're going to have to build is a far greater problem than alcohol or drugs. And I speak to someone.
You can't have a nation. You can't have the kind of nation I'm thinking about without cops. You know, see, and again, I see, you're more libertarian. This is
how do you like the cops we have now? You enjoy not being able to drive anywhere?
Well, I appreciate some cops. I really do. I'm glad there's police around, because, you know, otherwise things would be really bad. You know, you'd have terrible violence going on. So, yeah, I don't think that it's all bad. And where I live and where you live, it shouldn't be so bad. I mean, we need them. But law enforcement used to be very different from what it is now. You know, cops used to be kind of friendly people. They're getting less and less friendly, and they're trained to be suspicious of everybody, you know.
Whereas 911 had a very, anytime you promote and glorify cops as some kind of heroes, you're feeding into these, you know, 105
IQ. We're not glorifying cops as heroes. We're just talking
that's the
about
attitude today. The attitude today, though,
law enforcement in a country. I believe you have to have law enforcement. But do you think that white people, you think that white people can just get along so well, don't need any kind of disciplinary forces, they don't need any kind of rulership, just leave them alone, and then none of them will do anything wrong?
Plenty of them will do wrong stuff, but people are also capable of vindicating their own wrongings, as it were. Why give government a monopoly on the use of force? Let people fight some of their own battles.
So after somebody comes and murders five members of your family, well, then you're going to go out and vindicate it, you know, by shooting them. What's that? That's not going to bring your family members back.
Well, it's not like the cops are going to solve the problem.
Well, the cops are supposed to be. We're supposed to have.
How much time does the average convicted? How many people who commit murders are caught and convicted? I don't have the answer to that, but I know that the average convicted murderer serves like 7 years.
Yeah, well, see, that now we're getting into a whole. I don't want to just say I don't want to answer that because see, I'm sure you have, you know, there's plenty of good points.
This relates to what we're saying. This relates to what we're saying earlier, though. If are white keep people fundamentally capable of running their own affairs, or do they need a government manager?
I don't think today they are. No, I don't think they are. I don't think you can just let white people loose and not have a strong government for white, you know, white strong white government. Just let them loose, and everything's going to fall into place, which you seem to think.
Yeah. It worked before. I don't know that it ever worked.
You're talking about when we were colonial and had a very small population and lots of space around everybody and so on.
Well, we have a gigantic, overbearing government today, and it doesn't work at all, from what I can tell.
Well, I agree we have a gigantic or overbearing government. Of course we do. All right, let's just try to cover some more of this because we might get callers in the second hour, and they'll want to jump in on this and ask you questions. So there's nothing much too new here, much more. They have this whole long paragraph on international nationalism, and they start out, or the part I have here is that this nation is currently you can't call until the second hour, I just said. So please hang up. You know, what's wrong with this? Is white people, see? They can't follow directions. You can't tell them what
to
do.
Well, maybe you should call the police and have the police tell them not to call.
Well, I'm telling them.
You can handle it yourself? Oh, my God.
Yeah. All right. Running. So they say that this nation is currently the engine and the operating system for world Zionist empire. And therefore, if we got the reins of this country, then we could cut this out, and then they see encouraging nationalism all around the world. I'm always a little bit, wary of this phrase, international nationalism. It's not my favorite wording. I know what they mean by it, but I just don't much like it. Do you have any comment on international nationalism?
Yeah, it's a little bit clumsy, but I mean, the basic idea is, you know, nationalists in the world have even if they weren't white nationalists, they still have a basic understanding of how people relate. People want to be around their own kind, and that makes sense, whether you're an Indian, you know, Indian or Cambodian or German or whatever. That makes sense. It really is only the Jews and a subset of crazy whites who really, truly, the Jews rationally believe in race mixing because it serves rationally their own agenda. The whites believe it because they are delusional and they basically have developed a cult mentality for whatever reason that, oh, brotherhood of man. But for everyone else, all the normal whites and normal people of the less thinking races, nationalism makes perfect sense. Where people like me, you know.
Well, sure. Yeah, we've already identified that, but. So I think that's the idea. They just want to promote nationalism all over, and that's what it should be. So let's go on because we don't have too much time. And just mention the other two, American Nationalist Association, which I already mentioned. And they have a different kind of approach, kind of generalized in the beginning. They say they want to bring people together. But it all sounds very good to me. I mean, it's actually very good. If you think about it, they want to. Their intention is not to somehow bring about changes right away because they know they can't. So they want to bring people together, identify and develop priorities, harness our intellectual assets and resources, and champion public policies which serve our people, you know, and obviously disagree with and protest against those policies which don't. So it's all about, you know, like an ADL for white people, kind of, you know, looking after our own interests and so on. And they, though, are very Christian friendly, which you wouldn't like, but we're not going to go into that. It's Easter Eve. And so then there's the third one is by Andrew Anglin at Total Fascism, which he titles Total Revolution. And he tries to go into more detail and give actually definite things that we would do, once we were elected. He says we have to be elected, and like under race, he says, once elected, we will immediately enact decisive measures to end the establishing to the end of establishing white racial homogeneity in the United States. Well, see, there's that thing, once elected. You know, this is a long, long process if you're going to try to be elected. So none of this is, you know, is ready to go. But people want to point out things that they think should be in our society once we have one. What do you say?
Say everybody has their ideal of the society they'd like to live in, but only if you have the power to turn their... What did the Jews say? They said, we're over there in the Middle East making new reality every day, and you clowns are just reacting to it. And that is pretty much the reality of it. You can dream all day long, but until you have the actual power, or in our case, even a realistic way of getting that power, then you don't really have anything. I mean, if we had power, you, me, or anyone, even if we were from a Nazi to a libertarian, we'd still do probably 80% of the same stuff. If we agree on the basic racial stuff. So,
well, I think that none of these three are pro-libertarian at all. And you say you're not libertarian, but you sound like people. So that's one thing, you know.
I'm pro-market. I don't like the term libertarian, but pro-market, yeah. Market.
Okay, we've got
to solve human problems.
The market
has shown itself repeatedly.
Well, I believe it in a real free. I go along with a totally free market, not what we have. We don't have free market, but a real free market is a good thing. But I don't go along with libertarianism in all the other every other way. Okay,
because there are.
You know, we're about out of time here. We have to go to our break. So I want to tell the listeners that they have to wait until we get back on the air. After the music to call, and I would really rather that the people who wrote these manifestos don't call in order to explain the whole thing and so on. I'd rather try to give some other people a chance to call, see if they have, unless they don't call. So, and this is Moika Erdman singing the beautiful aria from Zaida, written by Mozart. So we'll be back in 5 minutes. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am Carolyn Yeager. This is Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn, and my guest is Alex Linder from VNN Forum, and we are trying to talk about white organization. And Alex, what I'd like to do now is to point out that the difficulty, you know, we've looked at these three manifestos, and the difficulty is in actually organizing people, not in writing about, you know, how you'd like it to go, what kind of country you'd like to have, what kind of laws you'd make, and so on. And now I have to point out that you have been in this for a long time, and you have, you know, a very well-known reputation. But and you have wanted to organize. You have desired to organize whites, but you never managed to do it either. What do you say to that, to the listeners?
Oh, that's certainly true. I've never actually tried to organize in the sense that I think most people would take you to mean organizing in terms of setting up a party and actually trying to run it. Now, we have organized, you know, ad hoc projects to do newspapers, and that's worked. We've done activism in terms of rallies, and that's worked. But doing an actual organization is a very different thing. And no, I've never attempted that. And I was briefly a member of the National Alliance. It's probably about the most successful white organization there's been in the last few decades, apart from Glenn Miller's White Patriots Party was also successful until the feds mm-hmm. blew up. The point I've always tried to make in writing about it is that all these groups that different people created tended to end up being undermined by the enemy. And thus, the real difficulty is not figuring out what you want to do after you've taken power. It's figuring out if you're going to organize, how are you going to stop yourself from being subverted and undermined and having your leaders set up and thrown in jail? And that's not something that's super fun to write about, like how I'm going to, you know, get rid of all the dual citizens when I'm dictator. But that's where the rubber meets the road, to use the cliche. What are you going to do when the enemy uses dirty tricks? And they always do. And none of these groups have any answer, A3P. That's why they never take off, because people perceive they're not serious. And that's why Golden Dawn in Greece has taken off, because they do have an answer. And the answer is, we're going to beat your motherfucking head in if you try to mess with us and get in our way. We represent Greece, and there just isn't any way around physical power. All the rest flows from having physical control of the streets and being physically connected to the people that you claim you represent, and not being some anonymous personality or even using your real name on the internet. They're just two completely different things, and we should know we're fighting. We're not fighting. We're writing stuff and putting it on the internet. You know, and there's
that's right. That's right.
But seriously, what are you going to do when the enemy uses dirty tricks? That's the first thing that any serious white organization has to ask itself. But
yeah,
here's the problem is the people who want to create white organizations correctly intellectually recognize there's a problem. The conservatives aren't doing the natural thing for the right wing, for the Republican Party to do would be to represent white people, but it won't do that. Why won't it do that? Because the Jews control the media, and they will use it to smear and destroy any white who tries to stand up for whites. So what do? Either you give in and you accept their terms, which is to be a liberal in the deeper stuff, if you want to have a career in national politics, or you reject it, in which case you're alienated and marginalized, as the left loves to say, and you exist on the internet with a much smaller following. How to get beyond that problem? Well, you're going to have to create something and set it up that's able to protect itself, and that is a technical matter. You're going to have experts in electronics. You're going to have cops. You're going to have experts in military arts, you know, people who can defend you and who can fight in the streets, as well as people who are lawyers and agitators and writers who can be the public face of it. All these things have to come together in one group. And so far, Golden Dawn is the only party in the West that has shown that it can actually do that in the real world. That's why I pay more attention to that than anything going on in the U.S.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I have to say, Alex, that paying attention to Golden Dawn is an easy and pleasant thing to do. And, you know, it's like rooting for a winning team or hoping they're not actually winning yet, but they're doing well. When nobody else is. So, you know, but we need to look at this country, and this is not pleasant to look at our problems here, but this is what we have to be doing. And I think that, these people have to start getting members, you know, that not saying who they are. They need, of course, they may just be writing these manifestos for, you know, a general appeal to show people where they're coming from, but they need to work, you know, not publicly, privately, in building something up. And then, of course, if it is private, you're not going to know who those infiltrators are you? And there are going to be in there. So you're right. This infiltration is a huge problem. I don't know that these people have any capability for detecting that. But, you know, that just trouble is you right away, you are in a, you're in a negative frame, you know, point of view. You're saying, well, this, we can't do this because we're always going to be infiltrated. So then if you just do it on the outward, well, I'm going to take this call. I think it's Rodney Martin. But I'm going to take his call. He may have some answer to that. And you go ahead and say whatever you want to say in the meantime to that. Well, you didn't have anything to say in the meantime. Let's see if he comes on.
Well, while you're trying to dig up the caller or connect him.
Well, no, that didn't work. Are you here, Rodney? Well, his sound is not working.
Hello?
Yes, hi. You need to turn off your sound, your radio or whatever.
Oh, okay. Yeah, hold on for just a second. I'm actually working on our radio show. Okay, I just turned it off there.
This is Bob in D.C. Hi, Bob.
Wolf Wall Street, right. Yeah, I just wanted to invite you all to my first show tonight at Truth Militia at 8 p.m.
Oh, come on. We're not talking about that. And I'm going to cut you off right now. Unless you have
well, good
questions
for you.
About this program.
Okay, right? Well, one thing I will say to Alex is he's right on target when he talks about Germany. And one thing that Alex said, are you still there?
Yeah, we're listening.
We're listening.
You said you were going to cut me off. One thing he said about Germany and the World War II, which I thought was very, very prescient and right on target, was, hey, we lost. We lost. That's what happens. You know, sometimes we just got to sit back and say, we're in a struggle, we're in wars, and we lost one. And Alex, I think you are right on target there. But tonight, the only reason I bring that up, Carolyn, is there's no politics tonight. It's all music. And I'm going to be going into the choral fantasy.
I don't care about your show. I didn't invite anybody to call on to push their program.
I know you don't.
So let's, you know.
You know, it's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah, goodbye. Hang up, please.
Yeah.
Okay, bye-bye.
Carolyn, let me make two points. First of all, I didn't say anything about what he's saying. I don't know if he's trying to be clever or what, but I don't recall saying that Germany lost. So,
No, I don't know.
Not accurate. Second of all,
Dan,
it's Bush League to get on here and promote your own show. If you want to get on here and say it's up to Carolyn whether she wants to say this is X from Y show. If she doesn't want to do that, that's up to her. You don't market your own stuff up front. What you do is you get on and you make your points and you get off.
That's
how it's done. That's just good manners. White people
should show. I'm sorry for interrupting you. I thought that was Rodney Martin calling to push his manifesto, but it wasn't the whole time. It was Bob from D.C.
But look, if you
get on to push his radio program.
People, if you're going to call in, have a point or two to make. Make it succinctly or have a good, solid question. Don't waste people's time. Don't promote your own garbage. Do that elsewhere. That's just common sense.
I forgot how to, okay. I forgot how to turn off a call.
Show some respect for the audience and don't waste their time and don't try to use calling in as a free chance to advertise your own garbage. It's not how it's done. That's we're supposed to be white here. Let's act white.
Well, there you go. Now, there's the thing with white. If you think that white people are going to get along and work this out, it doesn't work that way. I don't think that's at all possible.
No one said white nationalism solves all human problems. It's just we need a white racial basis. Race is a very crude thing.
I think that there would have to be quite a few laws and regulations, and people are going to have to be pushed into shape. They're not in shape. White people are not in shape, and they're not going to just get there all by themselves. They're going to need to be forced to get into shape. And that's where we have a big, big difference.
Oh, yes, the solution is very easily worse than the cure. You can't expect people to be all that good. They never were. They never will be.
Well, I would invite people to call in about this subject, you know, about how much control would there need to be in this white nation. But at the same time, you know, we do need to talk about how to organize. And people talk about secession. I don't know what your, I've forgotten, Alex, what your position is on the idea that we should.
Oh, I'm friggin' all for it, man. I love the idea of seceding. I would secede from myself and split in two. Like cell mitosis, if I possibly could, because I'm tired of myself. I want to be someone else, at least two or three more people. But I can't do that. So as a second best, I'll settle for hoping that something like Texas can secede. I doubt it, though. To me, it's all like pipe dream. What did Henry Kissinger say in Vietnam? He's like, you can't win at the table. Or someone said it about Vietnam. You can't win at the negotiating table what you can't win on the battlefield. So, oh, you want to secede. Oh, that's great. Now, why is Washington, D.C. and Jews and Zog going to let you secede? Why? They don't believe the Jews have proved.
Well,
Carolyn, we talked about earlier in the show, the Jews know that what they're putting out for us is garbage and poison, just like it says in Protocol. They know that they're deliberately instructing us in doctrines they know to be false. They know that they're spewing bullshit. So they're not going to let any. Why are you going to let Texas secede when if you hold on for another 15 years, it's going to be Mexican dominated and deliver Texas right into Jewish hands? So, oh, we want to secede. Well, you don't have any power, so who cares what you want? Of course I'm for secession. Who wouldn't be? I'm for the U.S. cracking up into 500 different countries. That doesn't mean it's going to happen or the powers that be are going to let it happen. Only thing I can see causing it to happen is an external factor of them simply spending it into bankruptcy, which they're doing a very good job of. But I don't know that will happen either.
Well, you said that you were hoping, you know, that Texas would succeed or waiting or something.
I'd love to see Texas.
But I'm going to point out that you're in a mode of just watching. Like you watch Golden Dawn and hoping that somebody else does something because you don't have any plan at all to do anything anymore, right?
Even leaving the health aside, no, I have no particular plan at the moment. I don't know how you would possibly go about destroying Zog any better than Zog's destroying itself. My goal is to continue to circulate some of the truths, but I admit that is one necessary thing, but it's not the main thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I'm willing to listen to anyone else who is actually doing something, but as far as I can tell, no one is doing anything in the U.S. except Golden Dawn, ironically enough, because they're setting up little groups in two or three different cities in the U.S. So they're the ones to watch even here.
Keep going. I'm taking another phone call.
Well, what I'm saying is Golden
it's
Dawn.
Another undisclosed, but. Hope it's not
what Golden Dawn is doing in Greece is not merely a matter for Greece, but it's a matter for all Europeans and also Americans to learn from. And these are people who understand, because some of them come from the left, how to do street level battle with these totally corrupt, totally dishonest, totally violent Jewish communists. And that's what we have to learn. We who come to white nationalism in America from an intellectual conservative background where everything is nice. And we don't ever curse or use slurs, and we use reasonable arguments delivered in a moderate tone. Well, that's not what real world politics is about. It's about violence.
Okay, who is calling this? Who's on the line?
This is Rodney.
Hi, Rodney. How are you?
How you doing? That wasn't me.
No, it wasn't you. It was an undisclosed, and I thought you're the only one I know who used that, so I thought it was you.
Yeah, I'm trying to get my. I got a new phone. I'm trying to get that where that doesn't happen anymore, Carolyn. But anyway, I wanted to call because you're the first one to actually get what this new ANA is. It's not a political. It has nothing to do with politics. That's just nonsensical at this stage. It's going to be a long time before, you know, a pro-white entity can enter into the political arena in this country. We have to build a natural constituency, and whites do not have a natural constituency. We, you know, it's been destroyed since 1945 and, you know, probably something before.
Yeah, well, okay, we know that. Now, the thing is, this is right where we were.
They don't have as leaders. They don't have anyone who will stand up under their name and try to lead.
Yeah, see, we know that we can't do anything, but how are you going to
build a
constituency?
No, we can do plenty of stuff, but
how are you going to build a constituency, Rodney? I mean,
well, the first thing is we're gonna do this, you know, somewhat in a step by step. You see, we put out a statement of principles, and now we're putting out, you know, statements on particular issues. We put out the one on our position on Christianity, which I know Alex has issues with. We're not going to agree on that 100%. But then we put out another statement just yesterday on the need to include revisionism. You know, we're not going to discard, we're not going to, quote, step over revisionism. We're going to reclaim and hold our history. And this is going to be an evolutionary process. We're not going to just throw a bunch of words on paper written by just one person. We're going to do this very methodically, and then outreach at the same time, and build this, and construct it. This is
mostly people don't have a problem with revisionism, and they don't mostly. I don't know if it's not about religion. I like your position is that you don't want to be religious at all, and let religion be a private thing. And that's good. So, but getting down to the real nitty gritty of actually, how do people? Are you going to have a membership? I mean, how do you know how many people are following you and how committed they are, and all of that?
This is just like more
website stuff.
Well, it's going to have its own. It's going to have its own website initially. It's going to have be a clearinghouse. There's going to have to be a repository at some point. That's all being built. Bear in mind, this thing's only about a week old, but we've been working on it for longer than that. Yeah. We decided to roll it out. But there's actually going to be, it's going to be a legal structure. A good model to look at that we're running parallel to, if you look back to, and we looked at several models, the National Alliance was a model we looked at, which was enormously successful. But before that was also the German-American boom. We looked at those two models that were enormously successful as far as advocacy and in starting to build a constituency. And, we can't look at those models as failures. They failed because of themselves. And in the case of the boom, they failed because of the coming of the war and the fact that the FBI moved in and crushed them.
Well, they can always bring a war on, too. They don't even mind bringing a war on. If a white group got successful enough, they would bring a war on to kill it, for sure.
Sure.
So here you have to have real sticking power with white people.
Well, Carolyn,
really
wait. The key here is how was the German-American boon destroyed? Leave the war out of it. I mean, the FBI went after it. This is part of what I've been talking about. Why don't you give the details since you studied it?
Well, obviously they targeted their leader. They targeted Fritz Kuhn. That was the initial. But probably without the advent of the war. The advent of the war gave them more muscle to do what they did to Fritz Kuhn. But one thing we're attempting to do, and again, this is going to be an evolutionary process.
No, Rodney.
Is to learn from the past.
Okay, I don't want you to just give all your stuff here. I'm sorry, I'm so rude. But what we want to get at is to the real problems that we have. And he just asked you, what are you going to do about the infiltration?
Well, infiltration is something that everybody's going to have to worry about, regardless whether you're an advocacy organization like us or you're going to go on the political side like some of these other organizations. And that's going to have to come from just really monitoring your members and keeping vigilant. And, when push comes to shove, it's not all that difficult to determine, who's real and who's not. And some of the requirements that we're developing is, we're not going to allow anonymous, fake named individuals. They're going to actually have to disclose who they are to be members. And
oh, I would think so. My God, good grief.
Yeah, we're not.
You couldn't have the other, but, well, let me interfere here. Alex, what would you say? I forgot my question now. How would you respond to this idea? Oh yeah, of advocacy. Is a whole bunch of plethora of advocacy groups better than not doing anything? I mean, let's say all three of these were advocacy groups, and then there are other advocacy groups.
Well,
and
it might be. I'm trying to understand what he's saying. First of all, I mean, so this is a group that anyone can join, or what is? I don't understand what it's going to do.
This is going to be like the Republican Democratic Party or organization where it's open entry and open exit by all. You actually have to, you will have to actually submit and get approval to be a member. And again, this hasn't been opened up yet. We've been flooded with a lot of inquiries. People want to join. Again, we put this out to, first of all, gauge whether we think it would be successful. we know it's going to be successful initially just from, we've used Twitter, by the way. I appreciate what you said about Twitter, Alex, because we've used Twitter to push it out there as well.
Yeah.
But no, it's not going to be, not anybody, it's not going to be, it's not going to be come one, come all. Our premise, there's two premises that we started this with. One, we believe, and I believe emphatically, that there's millions of whites out there that are racially aware that have been recoiled by the current state of what we call the movement. I don't believe we really had a movement. We want to go after those whites and give them something to be a part of that will advocate for their interests, i.e. the white middle class that have been decimated.
That's yeah, well, it sounds kind of like a A3P type thing, very much more in that direction than George Lincoln Rockwell. I mean, people think that, you know, I like George Lincoln Rockwell type organization better. And National Alliance, how did he succeed so well? What did he do? Was it just him? You know, you have to have a very charismatic and attractive person at the top, I guess, to draw people.
Well, I think it goes beyond that, Carol. And I think what happened, my opinion, what happened with Alliance is there was no plan for after Dr. Pierce. It just, there wasn't any, the foundation and the structure.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. We all know that. But while he was there, they were doing a lot.
And so when we talk about learning from our mistakes, and this is important, Carol, because you and I have talked about the IHR, we are going to actually have a structure where there will have to be a board because of the way we're going to be structured. We're going to make dang sure that we don't have a situation that would happen with the IHR or with the National Alliance. We're going to make very sure that that doesn't happen, or we're going to attempt to. Now, no one has a crystal ball can glare into the future, but when you look at people that's being groomed or going to be in leadership positions, we want to make dang sure that the character is a plus, and that those that serve on the board, we don't want to repeat, because what happened to the IHR and what happened with the National Alliance, that happened to them. That happened to those organizations because of those organizations, not because of
the way they were. Well, what do you say to that, Alex?
Well, I'm still trying to understand it. What form will your advocacy take? Are you or a group of other leaders going to be out there speaking in public, or writing stuff on the internet, or running for office, or what form is the advocacy in?
It's going to be a broad spectrum. Yeah, the internet's going to be a tool, but from my point of view, we've been too heavily dependent on the internet. We actually have to be out engaging in real work, and that can range from publishing. That could range from public policy. My contention is we have a lot of resources and tools in the toolbox that are being underutilized. There are pro-white lawyers. There are pro-white professionals out there that just won't come out. They won't come out and do anything because there's not a proper vehicle that will allow them to do it. That's what we're trying to accomplish. Whether we're going to be successful or not, don't know. We're only a week old.
Well, but you are more than a week old. Come on, you've been 3 weeks at least, right?
For instance, we'll give you an example. Say we have a situation where a white couple is getting hammered by Child Protective Services merely for their politics. We want to be able to be in a situation to bring resources to bear, whether they're legal resources or otherwise, to defend them properly. There's an example right there.
Like a white ADL. Well, okay. Do you have any more questions of Rodney, Alex?
Yeah.
No, I guess I see more what you mean. That part I would nail down though. Like, how are you going to do? What are you going to actually do? You know, there's all kinds of stuff that's written and broadcast, but
it's hard to do anything. They're saying what they'd like to do, but whether they're going to be able to manage.
Well, I know.
To do it. However, I don't want to be. You know, you have to be.
Hey, look, it's a great idea. But I mean, if you can find and dig up pro white lawyers to come out, I would be very surprised. That's an extremely difficult task, but I hope you can.
I'd love to see it. I'm well aware that the dirty tricks will come out probably much sooner than later. That I've had Antifa's parked out on the sidewalk and on my front lawn taunting my wife and children before. So I've had a taste of that. Probably not to the degree, Alex, that you've had, but I know that will come. I don't know if we've caught their eye yet because we're just only a week old, but within time that'll come, and I think that we'll be prepared to deal with that when it comes, because I've dealt with it before. And that's one of the issues of having the proper leadership in place, to have thick skin, to not fold like a lawn chair when that happens.
Okay, well, I think that you should be given a lot of credit and a big applause and so on for trying and doing all this work. And whether these things end up accomplishing their aim or not, I was trying to get at, is it a good idea for us to have as many people doing this as possible? But then they see that there's a lot of new activity in pro-white advocacy, and there would be probably some reaction to that. But there's always going to be reaction, so, you know.
It'll go beyond just advocacy. We also have ideas we've talked about as well as actually doing some actual in-person events and things of that nature, mm-hmm. and that goes back to the boom and some of the things that the Alliance did back in its heyday. But that's down the road. We need to get up and going and get some legs under us first, and demonstrate that we're credible. And as far as additional statements and such, we are working on additional statements on what we would envision, you know, a proper economic system would be, which is real free market. That's something that Alex and I share in common. We do believe in a real free market system, not this horrific system that's been imposed on us by Jews in the United States.
Okay. Thanks, Rodney.
Okay.
I appreciate the call. Best of luck, of course, to all of this. You know, this is the problem, Alex, is what about these Jews? You know, you've always come at it from let's get rid of the Jews and no Jews, just right. I always liked that. And that really, if we just got rid of the Jews, all kinds of things would fall into place. But trying to do anything with all these Jews in place, that's what I liked about the first one, where they were focusing on dual citizens. That didn't seem like a bad idea.
Well, there's millions of great ideas. The challenge is executing them. Oh, get rid of duals. Hey, I'm all for letting people who aren't dual citizens of Israel and the U.S. Run our government, but I don't have much I can do about it. You know? So what's the point in getting all excited about it?
Well, I guess the only question I felt I could put to you about this was, do you think that this is in vain, or do you think that it's a good idea that these people are doing this and getting enthused and writing things up?
The more the merrier. It doesn't hurt. I never, ever try to limit what someone else can do. Do something that amazes me. I'd love to see it work. Of course there's a need for advocacy. I wish we had, you know, it's 200 million in the bank and we had, you know, 200 lawyers at our disposal to send out anytime we found a white couple or white family being abused for political reasons, you know, so anyone who can try to build something like that, it's immensely useful. I would say that the electoral stuff, our mindset, as I said, comes from conservatism. We always think in the terms, we got to appeal to people, but no, what Golden Dawn has showed, you know, white people need help. What kind of help do they need? They need all kinds of help. Well, help them. Start by helping them. And that's how you bring in the political loyalty. That's how you build the people who are willing to vote for you, because, well, Golden Dawn was there. I don't really agree with their racism or whatever, but, man, they gave me a sandwich, and they took my grandma to the bank to cash her check, and they got rid of some immigrants who were squatting in an apartment that I own. You see, all kinds of stuff. That's where you start getting real political power. The ballot box is just the confirmation of it.
It's easier there because it's smaller. And, you know, here, I always say if we could just pick an area and then work in that area, we would do more. I've got somebody on the line, Alex, and it is 954 area code. Hello, caller. What is your name? Where are you from?
I'm Stuart down here in Florida.
Okay, Stuart. Stuart, I think you better give your full disclosure to Alex.
Okay, my full disclosure is I'm 100% Jewish, and although I, as I said in a previous show, I really don't feel any connection to it, but be that as it may, I'm going to be doing what I'm doing, whether I'm Jewish or I'm not Jewish. So you can evaluate my opinions on, you know, as you choose.
Thanks.
Okay. You know, Carolyn, I think it was very apropos that you had Rockwell on the opening just before the show. Rockwell was a great man. He knew how to organize and get in your face and not pull any punches. And the relevance to this discussion is it's exactly what's needed. Rockwell wasn't just theorizing. He was in the street dealing with the current situation politically. And that's what I feel a lot of the white nationalist movement doesn't do. You know, it's fine to go into theory and put out manifestos, but, you know, that's the framework for action. And in Rockwell's day, it was the civil rights movement, okay? And that was destroying, that was the battering ram to destroy the last bastion of white society, especially in the South. And today, I think that what we have to do is, and I don't see it recognized, there is a severe threat from the government right now, arming to the teeth, at the same time trying to disarm the public. And they're trying to set up a police state. And, you know, this is something that, you know, people need to try to organize on the framework of militias. And I've given out, you know, before, mm-hmm. you know, one of the best resources, Liberty Tree Radio. You can Google them and you can listen to their show in the evening. They have all kinds of preparations and how to deal with situations. And the government hasn't shut them down because they understand the threat and they've organized around it. Now, just to sum up here, I think areas for organization and intervention by the white nationalist movement in the future is going to be the economic crisis, which is destroying the middle class through increasingly heavy taxation, as well as very likely inflation due to the fact that the currency is not going to be the world reserve currency in the near future, as countries like China and Russia and others are trying to move away from it. That's going to cause severe inflation and hardship and a golden dawn type of situation for the people of the United States, where we can not only provide assistance, but we can give the political background as to who is responsible. Let me just add one other thing is Rockwell understood, even though the situation was better for him in his state, that you need some type of defensive organization. He had his own essay, for lack of a better expression. And you know, that's something that needs to be done. Anyway, let me end with that. I don't want to monopolize the time.
Well, thank you, Stuart. I think you, as usual, you have good ideas. And, you know, you clarified this. What I would like to say is that, you know, I'm on the side of the Rockwell type thing and going out very strongly, the Golden Dawn type approach, rather than on the kind of mild white advocacy, which there's nothing wrong if people are doing it. Like I say, the more everybody doing things, it's a good idea. But that's, you know, it tries to reach all these white people in the middle class. I realize that Adolf Hitler knew that he had to reach the masses, and he set out on a program to do that. But he had a smaller group of masses maybe to deal with, and there's more, you know, it was a tighter nation than what we have now. But I think that we have to shock people, and we have to give people a real big choice. So what do you say to that, Alex? Are you there, Alex?
I mean, yeah. Rockwell had a vaudeville background, so he was very good at doing sorts of stunts. His famous gorilla in Congress and stuff like that. I don't disagree with what Jew Stewart said. Most of it is pretty much what I think, but we do live in a different climate now. They didn't have all the hate crimes legislation back then. It still was like the legacy of America back then was still a pretty darn free and small government type thing, even as late as the 60s and 70s when it all started coming apart. And now it's a different climate now. I mean, it's very hard to do anything without being accused of being a hater or some kind of thought criminal. So,
well, I think that's an opportunity to go face directly against that. And I think Nazi too. Somebody was just wrote to me today that, you know, somebody in Norway, and they said we take Nazi as a positive word, and when they, you know, when people talk about Nazi, we talk about it as you know, the good people, the best people, the truest people, whatever, you know, just and honest and so on. So we need to just not allow them to use these words against us. That's
who cares if they use hater? What is it? So they use hate? What is that? It's going to scare you away?
Well, it doesn't. Regardless of how we feel, they're going to use it anyway. I personally get irritated at being called a Nazi because I'm not a Nazi. And if I were a Nazi, I would call myself a Nazi. But as I said, I believe in more of a market solution, not than a completely dictated, centralized socialist system, as Hitler had. And I actually believe in being a lot harder on the Jews. I believe in being harder on the Jews than Hitler was. That's for darn sure. But on the economic stuff, no, I prefer.
Well, how can you join those things together? I just, you know, I think we got on this the last time you were on, but how do you put together this libertarian approach and then also get rid of all the Jews? How do you do it? You have to get control of the reins of power first.
That's right.
And you know, and no, we all know that this power is so vast and it's so tight. How are we ever going to get control of that? Stuart, how are we going to get control of the reins of power? Through militia uprising?
It's a process. You know, as I said before, I think the electoral process is so fraudulent that I think it's closed off. So you should organize. You can consider organizing on the local level where the attacks are coming.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's what Golden Dawn is doing.
It grows up in the context of the struggle where you provide, you know, some organizational ability as well as the political context under which this is occurring.
Look at the Golden Dawn in Athens. They are taking the place of the state. They're providing all the necessities to these people who are being screwed because the economy is terrible and they're being attacked by these aliens that the NWO forces are letting in. So you go to white America, wherever they are, and say, we will solve your problem. You solve people's problem, then you have their hearts, their minds, and their souls. And eventually that will make its way into the ballot box. So just depends whatever the local circumstances are. Right now, Americans are watching the Final Four basketball. They're watching NFL football. They're not in a bad enough state to where they want some truly radical political solution. It scares the hell out of them. But us who pay attention to that stuff see that America's falling apart, and we know, like Stuart said, eventually we're going to get our chance. So,
well, I think, don't you think we should be organizing locally? And you know, there should be, I said this before, there should be like cells or something. And then you can work with the people.
Cells, when you say cells, you're playing their whole thing like we're violent domestic terrorists.
Cells, you know.
Network of people. Find people who think the same way and lead them and explain to them what's going on.
So then you got to have a bunch of leaders, people who are willing to go out and do that. It has to be, you know, people young enough. And people who are willing to do that. And that's where you can't find these people.
And see, that's the difference between conservatism and genuine radicalism. The radicalism is oriented to the youth and the coming generations. Stuart probably knows Golden Dawn just set up nursery schools. So they're directly competing with the Greeks equivalent of the NEA assholes who are indoctrinating Greeks into globalism. And they're saying, no, here's our school for our kids and our future. And that's what we're fighting for. And we have to have that in the U.S. And yeah, it takes all kinds of people doing it. And you need young men who are strong, bold, and aggressive and ready to fight for this stuff, not these old people who, all you know, they're in bad health. All they can do is ever write checks, which is part of it. But you need to be oriented to the young and the future and the dynamic part and the red color.
Well, that's what we've got with these groups. Stuart, what do you want to say?
Well, no, I just wanted to say is that, you know, there's this, oh, they're going to attack us. You mentioned the cell structure, which may be necessary, but they're going to attack you, and the sooner you realize that the violence is going to come from their end and that you better prepare for it and stop being a panty waste about it and recognize it, the better off you're going to be and the better off you're going to survive, because these people are ruthless. We saw what they did in Russia and other places, and that's part of it is armed defensive organizations, and you know, the militia show that I listen to, they know that they're coming, and they've had skirmishes with them. And their attitude that they'll say right on the radio is, if they want to play secret police and come around, you wipe them out. None of them get away. You wipe them out. And it started. You better start thinking in those terms, because they're going to put they're going to wipe you out, and they're going to laugh about it. Okay, so that's all I wanted to say.
Well, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, that's more the reality of it. And you think back to Hitler's time and realize that you had a pretty even split between the Jewish communist and the German nationalist after World War One and that crazy period. Well, a lot of the cops and courts were actually in Hitler and the nationalist favor. Well, today the entire infrastructure is almost uniformly anti-white and just exceedingly hostile. So we're actually in a worse situation in a lot of ways than Hitler was in.
Well, if you're going to have people who don't like Nazis or don't want a dictatorial thing, well, and don't want this,
Carolyn,
are they going to put their lives on the line? They're not. If these are people who are interested in economy and are libertarian and they want to, you know, have a, they're not going to put their lives on the line. They'll cooperate with the Jews all day long.
The enemy doesn't make any distinction between Adolf Hitler and Bill O'Reilly. Or George Bush. Anyone who's No, they don't.
Well,
they're all Nazis to them.
Well, sure, they're not all Nazis. But
you're right.
It
comes down to whether you'll fight.
That's right.
The market stuff and the individualism. The libertarians are very big on very serious distinctions and discriminations, but not on the deepest stuff. That's why ultimately they never get anywhere. But they still have a lot to teach us. And I think of them as kind of like the interior decorators. But the racialist stuff is the foundation and the roof and the walls. It's the essential starting point for the society we need.
What is the essential starting point?
Well, we have to have a race-based society.
Okay, it seems to me you're either going to focus on a race-based society or you're going to focus on economic freedom.
No, because you believe that a race-based society means the government dictating every last little thing and running every last little system.
Well, I don't believe that.
It doesn't mean that at all.
The
government defends the racial basis. We are overtly deciding and putting it on paper. We are going to be a race-based society. No one is going to be allowed to mess with that or we will kill them. And
well, who's going to put it on paper? See, the people who are libertarians are not going to put that on paper.
They're not going to be part of it. It's only going to be people who want to be part of it and people who resist it and get killed.
And you've got to inspire these people. And to inspire these people, people are going to be put their lives on the line, they have to be inspired big time. And what inspires people better than a leader like Hitler and all that symbology and so on? That works. And you've got to have something behind it. You can't be fooling them and saying, well, you know, get... Right. See, I don't think that
the inspiration is the chance to live not just in a white society, but a society where you're free to make adult decisions as we are not today. But when you want to manage people like they're gerbils, I mean, that's what's not appealing.
There are gerbils, a lot of them.
Really? You're going to manage me or I'm going to manage you?
I said a lot of them. Some of us are not manageable, but a lot of people want to be managed.
You don't want to be managed, but you think everyone else wants to be managed.
I didn't say everyone else. I said a lot of people.
I don't want to be managed by some white clown anymore, and I want to be managed by some evil communist Jew.
I know you don't, but that doesn't mean that you would have to be managed. But there are people that would have to be managed.
Well, they're going to be managed by having their nuts clipped off or sterilized and not given welfare, so they either work or die out.
Well, who's going to make that decision? If all white people are so free.
The people who set up the country and write the law so that there isn't some government infrastructure that's subsidizing these defectives.
Okay. Well, I risk
the arrangements they want for themselves.
The phone number, listeners, is 1-830-443-4911. I wish somebody would call in who would have something pertinent to say about what we've been kind of going back and forth about here.
But look, the starting point is what separates us from the conservatives and everybody else is we agree that we need a society that is made up of whites. Leaving everything else aside, even as a totally socialist society, it would still be better if it was all white than this racially mongrelized mess that we have today. So that's what
That's
the starting point. Beyond that, we disagree on a lot, but that's the one essential thing that white nationalists agree on. White nationalism, it's not a real well-defined term. It means one thing, and it leaves a heck of a lot open. And that's where a lot of the confusion and disagreement comes from. There's a lot of assumptions that people bring into it. But all white nationalism says we're going to have a white nation. It doesn't say anything about the political structure of the country.
Well, that's right.
The role of the
government. I'm talking about the resistance fighters, you know. What are they going to be believing in? What are they?
Oh, they're going to believe in. We have the chance to live in an all-white country where we actually control our own lives and our community. We can exclude. Well, there aren't going to be when we win. There aren't going to be any blacks or Jews around. It's just going to be us whites.
Okay, this is a caller on the line from 608 area code.
That's extremely inspirational. The Republicans certainly don't offer anything like that.
Well, yeah. Hello, caller. What is your name? Where are you from?
Hi, this is Helvina from Wisconsin.
Well, hi, Helvina. Nice to have you on the line.
Thank you. Well, what I would like to ask is, why am I listening to the White Network and listening to Mr. Stewart from Florida? He can write, I really don't want to hear his point of view. I want to hear white people's point of view.
Well, you know, Stewart is, you're right. We just recently, last program found out that he was Jewish, and he didn't have to tell us, but he said he was going to,
Well, and that's very fine. That's very fine. But
yeah.
Once you know
he
is.
Well, I think he has some good things to say. You're right.
Well,
there's
sure. They,
well, what do you have to say? Tell us.
What I have to say is just that, I want to hear white people. And I think what you're doing is very good. And I really like Hatting. And Mr. Lane there is interesting, and I just want you to keep up the good work, but I'm interested in hearing white people.
Okay, well, you're a white person, so we'd
like to hear you.
Well,
I don't consider myself a leader of any sort. I'm just a follower and evaluating what I hear. I listen to a lot of different things from all points of view. Mm-hmm. I hear plenty of Jewish people on the mainstream media, so that's why I go to alternative sources to hear other points of view. As far as any sort of revolution, I don't think the American people are ready for it yet. That doesn't mean they won't be in the future. Things aren't going well. I'm not happy with what I see. That's all I have to say.
Well, would you join? What we've talked about, like these three manifestos, I don't know if you looked them up or not, but...
I like what Golden Dawn's doing. I think that we need a government, we need leaders that look out for our own people. I respect Louis Farrakhan for his standing up for black folks. You know, I want someone that stands up for us.
Would you object if Louis Alvina, would you object if she had Louis Farrakhan on the show?
Not at all.
He's not white.
And don't laugh, please. Because the blacks have not, don't have any control in this country. You don't hear black people from the mainstream media. You hear what the Jewish controlled media wants us to hear from those people.
Yeah, and they select black viewpoints are legitimately black.
You're right. You know, I've heard enough of Jewish people. I want to hear what people who say they're Americans and Chinese have to think. Fine. I mean, I would like to have our only white network, but apparently we don't have that. So if we're going to start really wanting to know what other people think, then I think we have to hear from those other people. I already know what Jewish people think. I hear it all the time.
Well, we don't have very many white people letting us know what they think, do we? Now, I have another caller
I appreciate you letting me ask why we have a Jewish person on. I didn't call in to give my opinions about everything. I did give you one there
that
I think it would be good to know what real black people think, you know, and real Hispanic people think.
Yeah, there's
instead
value.
Of what the mainstream.
You think there's value
tells
in
us.
That, Alex?
Yeah, I do.
You're saying you do?
Don't construe this stuff too narrowly. You got to realize that it's not just white racial expression that the Jews are suppressing. There are whole huge segments of reality being suppressed by the Jews. In the early days of VNN, I ran an article by a black woman who was a light-skinned, attractive black woman, about how the hood rats just friggin' hated her and attacked her and tried to cut her up.
I'm fully aware of this portion of reality. Hold on. I'm fully aware of that. I wouldn't want to have these people on the white network. Now that's really.
But you don't mind having Mr. Florida
there.
I've
never never had. He called in. I've never had.
He called
him.
In the last time I listened to too, and you gave him more time on the air than you've ever given anybody else without interrupting him.
Well, he's a better caller than I had.
Well, fine, but you know what? If you're going to have a white network, then have a white network or listen to other people. We get the Jew point of view all the time.
All right. I got your message.
Okay, real good. Keep it up.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Now, you know, I'm not upset that she voiced her views about Stewart, but I can't see how she can say that and then she wants to hear blacks and Mexicans and so on.
The key is the white network is owned and run by whites and it advocates white interests. Beyond that, I think that's the main part. If you let Jews in, that's a decision of yours.
Well,
it doesn't bother me.
I would never ask Stewart to come on and be a guest. But if he calls, you know, I happen to have talked to him enough before I knew he was a Jew.
Yeah, I mean,
to know that he's sincere and I kind of like him. So, I'm not going to hang up on him.
I
don't know.
I think a distinction between, you know, a formal political party where you would definitely exclude Jews and act in a totally dictatorial manner versus a media where there's value in just getting everything
input,
that's suppressed
yeah.
by the mainstream media out there.
Right. We've got another caller on the line, and I hope it's not. It's another undisclosed, and I'm going to maybe try not to take calls from undisclosed people. He's still here. Who's on the line here, please?
Hi, this is Frank from the Cleveland area.
Well, Frank, how nice. I'm glad you're not Bob from D.C. Okay, Frank, you've been very patient waiting, and I think you're kind of familiar to me.
Well, I've called some shows in the past. Not yours. However, I do want to thank you for all of the excellent broadcasts you've done over the years, and I want to thank Alex for the many, many articles of his I've read over at VNN. Just wanted to start off with that. And I wanted to make one succinct point that you had asked about. I'm listening to this debate about libertarianism versus socialism, and you know, I got to tell you, Alex, I just think you're an amazing mind, an amazing writer. But, yeah, you know, everyone has their blind spots. And as far as giving equal freedoms to all whites in some sort of future society, I think the results are in that would be a disaster. I mean, every single time your average white person is asked to make rational decisions, whether it's on a jury, you know, condemning Matt Hale for doing nothing to 40 years in prison or taking away all of Tom Metzger's property for doing nothing. You know, in every single case, they've proven themselves to be just idiotic cowards, as our ancestors knew. There have to be a strata. There has to be the elites, and I don't mean you're elite just because you discover oil or you collaborate with a Jew. But you're elite based on your IQ, your willingness to sacrifice for others. And then there has to be the throng of people who are managed. The results are in. Not only did our ancestors know that, but current circumstances prove that every time. Just my opinion.
Well said, Frank. What do you say, Alex?
All right. Thanks for your opinion, Frank. Yeah, I mean, people in these juries have been indoctrinated for years and years, and unfortunately, Americans have really become very spineless people. Although Mencken was saying back in the 20s that the Anglo-Saxons were the most timorous poltroons he'd ever seen in his life, and he regretted that his family had ever come over here from Germany. And it's pretty hard to argue against that. They're easily lied to, easily misled. What can you say? But still doesn't mean I want to turn over the everyday decisions in my life to some, you know, picture postcard painter who wants to.
You're taking this personally, Alex, instead of thinking what's good for the whole.
Well, of course I'm taking it personally.
This is what we have to be careful about.
No.
You can't say, well, I like smoking dope, so therefore I think dope should be legalized, and that's the basis for your reasons.
Why not? I don't like living in a state where all the adult decisions are made by some authority, and that goes for whether the
I'm just saying you don't make the decisions based on your own personal likes and dislikes.
Well, sure you do, in part. Well, of course you do.
Alex and Carolyn, both of you have proven that you would be out of the to-be-managed category,
right.
Obviously. You simply have to make those distinctions. Plato knew it. All ancient societies have known it. It's just simply an incontestable point. Well, anyway, I'm going to let you two go and listen to your fascinating conversation. Thanks
okay.
again.
Thanks for calling, Frank. My point is that if you simply don't subsidize the bad stuff and the defective people or the people you think ought to be managed, the problem will take care of itself. They'll die off.
Well, you know, you can always say the problem will take care of itself. First, you have to have a strong person to not subsidize these people. You have to have a very, very strong person to do this revolution to begin with or to make any changes. And so it's going to be somebody like that. And then, you know, you see how it goes after that. Yeah, I think I agree with Frank. I think Frank put that so well, much better than I do. And I'm glad he called in. And I think you should think about that because I think he makes a better argument than you do, Alex.
Well, that's fine.
I know. Let's see. We've only got 2 minutes, so I'm going to let you close off here and speak. Say what you want to say.
Well, I guess
I got 1 minute.
What I would say is the way I try to get around it is we need white racial basis to society as a starting point. Within that, let the people who want to have everything managed set up their own shop. I want to live where people are like they used to be in the U.S., where there's basically no government. People do what they want. And I don't think white people clearly will never agree on that. But no, I have no interest in being bossed around by Hitler any more than being bossed around by the neocons.
How many people did Hitler boss around? He really didn't boss people around. You know what? We're not here. I have to say goodbye. I think I look at my
cues.
Okay, we're going. That was 60. I'm watching it. I'm getting that. I'm sorry, Alex. We're not going to hear the music or the cues. So. We've still got a few seconds. I want to thank you very much for coming on. I think we got your message there.
Well, Carolyn, thanks for having me. I always enjoy it. And thanks to all the people who are listening and calling in. We appreciate it.
Yes, we do. And, you know, we're not off. We're not off yet. So I hope you'll come back again. And everybody keep up with everybody else. We'll just see what's going on.
Yeah, maybe certainly I will come back again and encourage people to read up, look around, or read up on Golden Dawn if you haven't heard about it. It's very interesting. And I think the most significant thing going on in white politics today.
Well, we hope that they continue to succeed there. I certainly hope so. Okay, our music is on. So good day, everybody. And thanks, Alex.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.